It's hour two of the 9 till noon show on this Thursday morning. A few of your comments before we go any further with regards to our discussion with Councillor Kieran Brogan regarding Naudoc and the ambulance service. Naudoc sent a fella to the emergency department with a cut on his nose to be stitched. He sat all night until 7:15 to see a doctor. All it needed was to be cleaned and paper stitched. If people could see a doctor, there'd be far less people in ambulances. If you call a doctor's surgery, you're lucky to get the receptionist, if they even answer, and they'll diagnose your problem. Be easier getting an appointment in the White House with Trump than seeing a doctor. Since COVID, we can't get into surgery. Door locked, ring the bell and wait. It shouldn't be allowed. All doors in local surgeries should be open to patients to walk in, so says a caller. Another caller says, it's unbelievable trying to blame the patients for deficiencies in the ambulance service. This is coming from someone who's a member of a party which was in government for decades and consistently failed to properly fund the health system. Caller says, I think it should be made very clear that if someone believes they need an ambulance and they need to go to the ED, they should go. I would worry that this conversation could put people off going. Absolutely. I mean, if there is an emergency, yes, you should absolutely call an ambulance. I went to the ED with chest pains after I had tests done and they were clear. I was then lectured about wasting doctors' times. Now, no, I mean, in fairness, it does have to be said, if you believe that there is a cardiac episode or something like that, absolutely. You call an ambulance immediately. That goes without saying, I would have thought. With regards to Christmas markets, a caller says, over the past number of years, Councillor Jack Murray has made a big deal about the Christmas markets in Swan Park and Buncrana and how they'd be a big crowd puller. Why this year do we have to pay to get into the same markets? Caller says, Enoch Burke needs to be nominated for the 2026 Nobel Peace Prize for standing up for religious liberty and freedom and by opposing the state grooming of vulnerable children in Irish schools. Who out there is in a position to nominate Mr. Burke for the Nobel Peace Prize? Because Enoch has now set the international standard for caring about vulnerable children and religious freedom of thought by his saint-like suffering. The Catholic Church should likewise declare Enoch Burke a living saint for the courageous example he has set. Even though Enoch is a Protestant, religious affiliation shouldn't matter in the slightest. Another caller says that the new migration changes are weak and watered and mean nothing. It was always 5 years for someone to become a citizen. The UK government say 20 years. Ireland is doing nothing to stop illegal immigrants coming in. People here can't get jobs or homes, but just bring the world in. No mention of housing the homeless. And if you're Irish and live in Donegal, it's so hard to get a job. I've been out of work since June and I apply for loads of jobs. Employers don't even view your application. I know this because Indeed shows you if your application gets a view. Lots of people are out of work. The government and other so-called opposition just want more migrants to get votes at election time, as they know that people like me see them for what they are. Unfairness is everywhere. Young Irish people can leave their own country to be replaced by illegal migrants, which will keep wages low. The government never takes care of their own. All they want is praise from the EU and the UN. And that comes into us from James. Another caller says, great news that Minister Jim Callaghan is changing the laws in relation to immigration. Good to see at last people are realising that only so many can be catered for. We have a major housing and health crisis, and yet many of these new citizen seekers are being given priority over taxpayers. Another, back to the health service and ambulance. Caller says, I think it's a disgrace that the health service is the way it is. What I took from Kieran Brogan's interview is that he is frightening old people from contacting the ambulance service. People are struggling. I don't think it's fair to scaremonger people sitting at home who will now stay at home sick because they don't think they're sick enough for an ambulance. In fairness, I think what was being said was that people should be visited in their own homes, either by Naudoc or by the Pathfinder service, should be helped in their own home and should not told not to call an ambulance, not told not to come into ED, but given the service in their own home, that means they don't need to go to the ED. I think in fairness, that's what Kieran Brogan was saying, and it's a slight misquote now to say otherwise. Another caller, and again back to Enoch Burke. Enoch was forced out of the school to do something against his conscience. This is the root cause of the ongoing case. The appeal has been kicked down the road because according to our constitution, Enoch is being denied his rights and is being unduly punished, tortured and ostracised because of the woke authorities in this country. All people have to do is study the CAS report if we're serious about safeguarding the futures and well-being of our children. Would motorists start obeying the law and stop stopping on the yellow box on the hospital roundabout when travelling up the De Valera Road, the big hill at the fire station, heading toward the mountain top at rush hour in the mornings and evenings? The traffic coming down Glen Carr and out of the hospital can't get away. Normally on these issues, I am absolutely impartial and will pass no comment. But speaking as someone who comes down from Glen Carr to that roundabout a couple of times a day, caller says, you do not use your phone with eyes down when driving. There's always the new technology of Bluetooth and numbers on the front of the screen. Now, there was a question asked. There are containers arriving daily and eliminating parking. It's really sad. People can't move their cars for breaks. People that have appointments must be so frustrated. That was the question. This is in relation to the ongoing works that are taking place in the vicinity of the hospital. Now, there is a response from the HSC. Letterkenny University Hospital has seen an increase in the range of services offered, staffing levels and activity in recent years, which has led to pressure on car parking spaces. We understand the challenge this presents to some staff and patients. In addition to our service-driven pressures, LUH has a number of construction projects in progress at present, and these projects require temporary site compounds to function effectively. Those projects will be ongoing for the next 6 months, and while they're very welcome in improving our facilities, they will have an impact on parking. We are in discussions with HSE Capital and Estates to extend our car parks, and we do hope to progress these matters in early 2026. That's a response from the HSE. And indeed, we know there are a lot of projects going on in the hospital itself. Now, one big project actually that's taking place at the moment is a major rewiring and electrical improvement programme. Now, that's something that won't necessarily be a big major thing that's going to be seen by the public, but that is something that very potentially will have a huge impact on the hospital and the efficiency with which it can provide its services. And you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show on this Thursday morning. A correspondence we received from a listener. I have a child who has a drug problem. I don't know what to do and what the right thing to do is. My view and my wife's views are different. I don't think he needs help yet. He probably wouldn't be at a stage where he would accept help. He thinks it's just sociable. But it's gotten to the stage that it's every night he's out. He's not working and has no desire to work, but he's a good-natured young person. Where do parents turn to for the right advice? Has anyone else been through this and know how to help? I'm more open than his mother, but I still can't talk about it openly. This has been ongoing for over 2 years. He was in denial. We managed to prove it was going on with at-home drug tests, which are very good as it shows up in the urine. Where do we go from here? Now, we had one or two responses. One caller said, contact the Family Support Services in the AFI, Alcohol Forum Ireland, who have a dedicated excellent service available to family members affected by alcohol and other drugs. This is confidential, non-judgmental and free. And I will give you a number for that service in just a moment. But we were also contacted by Thomas Campbell, who joins us on the line. Thomas, good morning.
Good morning.
Thomas, you yourself are in recovery from addiction and you heard that comment from our caller. And you can offer a very unique perspective because you were where their son currently is.
Yes, 100%.
What advice would you give?
So for me, I was at the stage that they're at. So it was always pointed out to me that I had an issue with drink. I was told from my early 20s that, look, you need to look at your drinking. There's a real issue here. You're drinking most nights of the week. But for me, I was always in denial. I was always in denial that there was an issue. I put it down to where I lived, the age it was. It was the thing they do. No, this is all my friends are doing. But I couldn't see that my drinking was a lot more escalated compared to everybody else's. No, it's very hard for family because the outside can always see there's an issue, except from the person that's in the addiction. They're always the last to find out that there is a problem with the addiction. And the hardest part with a family is that you have to wait for the person that's in the addiction to see it for themselves that there is an issue. And for them to get that, no. I went to the Northlands for addiction around about 10 years ago, but I'd done it for somebody else. Mm. I didn't, at the time, have any intention of stopping. I didn't see that there was a problem. And for me to accept that I needed help was never going to happen. No, that only came 4 years later, whenever I really had rock bottom with my addiction. I ended up in hospital 3 times within the 1 week. Hooked up the IV drips because my body couldn't tick with the amount of alcohol that I was taking. And it was only at that stage where it was sort of put to me, if you don't do something now, you're not going to be here for much longer, that I realised that I needed to get help. I needed to reach out and, you know, sort of ask for the help to be able to tackle my addiction.
What that father is saying then in that comment, that the father effectively doesn't believe the son has spiralled down far enough to actually realise the situation he's in. Do you believe that is by and large accurate?
Yes. No. For somebody in addiction, I would say 90-95% of the times you have to hit rock bottom before you can get help. No, you might get bouts of sobriety in between times. But I believe that you have to hit rock bottom before you can get help.
You yourself are now a counsellor with Northlands. I mean, you've gone completely.
No.
Or you're a support worker. Sorry, it's a different thing.
A support worker. Yes.
Yeah.
So after I'd done Northlands, I'd done the treatment within Northlands. They offer a 6-week residential treatment. I was on there whenever COVID hit, so I only done 3.5 weeks. I then went on to do their 2-year aftercare program. And then after the 2 years, I was invited back as a volunteer, which I then volunteered for 1.5 years before a full-time position came up then as a support worker, which I've now been doing for the last 2 years.
What advice would you give to the father in this situation? Because at the moment, he believes he's playing what is effectively almost a horrendously hopeless waiting game.
Yeah. So I would suggest that you need to understand what addiction is. Understand that addiction is an illness. It's a different... The way I always sort of put it is, we have a different way of working within our minds, and whenever that need or thirst for the alcohol or the drug picks out over, there's no stopping it. There's no way of changing that. At that time, it's only when you realise there's a problem and you start to get the help that you can see that there's an issue. So I would suggest that he goes to somebody that can offer family support, who can give him the help and advice of how to deal with the situations that are going to be arising, what's best for the care that he can give. Now, sometimes, like for me, it was a really hard love from my family that helped me realise that there was a problem. And it's very tough for a family, for a loving family. They turn around and turn their back on somebody. But sometimes that's what's needed. But he definitely needs to go to somebody that offers family support.
Yeah.
To be around all their family members. Family members are always forgotten about here, of how much support and help that they give to somebody within the active addiction. So to be around other people that are going through the same scenarios, that they can get help and support and guidance from people that have been there, is the best thing for them at this moment in time.
Yeah. Thomas Campbell, thank you very much indeed for that perspective, and all the best to you in your ongoing recovery. And all the best to those you
Thank
work
you
with
much.
As well. Thomas, who back in 2020 was a resident in Northlands, now is a support worker working for Northlands. And thank you indeed, Thomas. At this stage, I will give out the number for the Alcohol Forum Ireland service. This is their family support service. They can be contacted on 074-912-5596. That's 074-912-5596. That's the service offered by Alcohol Forum Ireland to family members affected by alcohol or other drugs. And it's, and what Thomas said there rings true, that it's very difficult for the actual families themselves. Another caller says, I've been through the system with a son who had addiction issues. My son's been into addiction rehab twice. Lack of motivation is all part of the addiction. Very often they tell you they want what you want to hear, but they do the opposite. Even in the rehab centre, he failed the drugs test a few times. The second rehab was different. He does have multiple addictions. He didn't remove himself from his circle of friends, who are a bad group to be with. It's a very long process and very sore on parents who have very little support. And then another caller has suggested to us, if you just bear with me, I'll just grab. It's a very difficult situation. From my experience, there is no right or wrong answer as such. It depends on the individual until the person in active addiction decides they want to stop for them. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter what anybody else does. For the parents, my advice is do what feels right to you, but try to get support for yourself, as this is a very difficult situation. Decide what you do and don't want to support and set boundaries to protect yourself, and then be firm. Ultimately, as counterproductive as it seems, the only person you can control is yourself. Be kind to yourself and remember self-care is not selfish. Again, I will repeat the number, Alcohol Forum Ireland, their dedicated family members service for family members who are affected by alcohol or drugs. The number is 074-912-5596. We'll take a short break. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, yesterday, if you were listening to the news in the evening, you'd be aware that Minister for Housing James Brown received cabinet approval to publish the Remediation of Dwellings Damaged by the Use of Defective Concrete Blocks Amendment Bill 2025. As we know, several thousand homes, many in Donegal, but also in Mayo, Clare, Limerick and Sligo, among others, have been affected by the defective blocks crisis. There is a scheme in place and a bill was promised to give effect to a number of increases and amendments and changes. That bill has now been published. It'll come to the Dáil, we understand, in the coming weeks. Well, one person that'll be taking a very keen interest in that, obviously, is Deputy Charles Ward of the 100% Redress Party, and he joins us this morning on Zoom. Charles, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. Good morning, all the listeners.
Charles, put this into context. How important is this amendment bill that's been announced by Minister Brown? Because we know there have been promises of extra money, of widening of caps and other things, and they have to be given legal expression by these amendments. Now, you do have some reservations that they don't go far enough. We'll come to that in a moment. But put this into perspective. How important is it that this clears the Dáil as quickly as possible?
Well, it is important that it does clear the Dáil, but it had the potential to be so much more, you know. So it is important, but I want to emphasise that the fact of the matter is this will clear the Dáil now and they will be able to receive their payments in January, maybe February, okay? But the irony is why would you do this to people? Why was this not done earlier? Why did they not have this in place so that the people could have a Christmas? With the fact is that they had the 10% retrospective payment. It's all so cruel, as far as I'm concerned. And it's just another... The fact of the matter is the potential was there, and I feel the potential was lost, and they just do it to suit themselves, basically, when it comes to these amendments. And it's not for the good of the people, it's for the good of the exchequer.
Is this just a glacial pace of bureaucracy, or do you believe this is actually, as you've suggested there, a deliberate... way of saving money in the 2025 budget?
It's a deliberate way. Now, there's a defective concrete scheme in place, okay? But there's a levy on every single house that is built in Ireland now because of this. And that money, we don't even get where it comes in. But it's not broken down of where's this spent and how is this spent, because there's, as far as I'm concerned, there's no accountability at government level when it comes to the defective concrete scheme. It's basically what you've got going on here now is you've got people that will be able to avail of the 10% retrospective payment, but you have 43 families that have been abandoned by the state, abandoned. And I fight for everybody, people who get it and people who are left behind. And to me, the 43 people that are left behind, they're not going to get this. They're not going to be able to avail of this after they were promised. Promised, and a press release and everything from the government. There's a lot of things side by side, no side by side. I mean, what does that tell you? We're talking about a government that, as far as I'm concerned, are cruel.
And just to clarify the side by side reference, that means effectively you can have, and indeed we do now have situations where two houses affected by defective blocks, one they're semi detached, they're joined. One is knocked and undergoing the process. The other is still standing.
No, Donald.
Sorry. No, I'm getting right.
Side by side would be somebody could build on a footprint of land that they have the room to. So, for example, there's a couple with a disabled child, and their house is adapted for that child, and there's nowhere for them to move. So, ideally, build the house next right next door.
I beg your pardon. Yes.
and then move them over. And to leave that and say that that will be at the behest of the housing minister is cruel, simply cruel. You know, the families should have, they should have be able to move forward and get their house up and built. They've been waiting years and years and years. And unfortunately, this amendment, it just basically throws that out the window.
And in terms of the early starters, the 43 families that as you say, have been abandoned, there was a, it's a date in March, I think, of last year, that if they had started before, is it March 24, if they started before that, then they don't qualify. But that date appears to be arbitrary.
Yeah, it's plucked out of the sky. It's absolutely nonsense. It's you know, it's a framework for cruelty, as far as I'm concerned. We told them at the Housing Committee that we wanted that date scrapped. We wanted that date gone, and they would take it on board. But no, they haven't taken it on board at all, because what they've done is basically they've abandoned 43 people, you know, because of a date. A date that makes absolutely no sense. It was the date that the caps and rates were introduced or something like that, said in the Housing Committee. Absolute nonsense. It's about will, and I keep on saying this, if the government had the will to do this, this would be sorted in the morning, and they don't, and they just keep on brushing it and making us wait and wait and wait, pushing it down the line, wait. And just it's just the irony is where I can understand people being happy at getting the 10% retrospective and actually being able to go on with their lives and move out of debt for some of them. But the majority of people in this scheme will incur tens upon thousands of euros of debt. And ones that are getting this 10% retrospective payment, that will go off to paying off certain amounts of it. But they're still in debt. And anybody that says that they're getting out of this scheme and it's working, well, you haven't come to me yet, and I'm waiting. I've been waiting for people to come to me and show me this is working. It isn't working.
Yeah.
And the government know this, and it's all about flashing out the figures, 2.2 billion, and this scheme is working. But the numbers indicate that it's not. In 3 years, we built just over 200 houses, 300 houses on the waiting, and most of them are partial remediation. So how is that a success when we have to go and revisit this again in the future? It's scandalous.
One of the things that concerns me most personally is the number of people I speak to who haven't even started. They're not even on the scheme yet, because it's just, in terms of upfront costs between the initial testing and getting a contractor and all that, there is so much to be done that they're saying to me, and I had a conversation as recently as last night with someone who isn't on the scheme, and part of the reason is they just don't have the wherewithal to start, never mind finish.
Well, it was like this. I said to Simon Harris last night when we were talking about the amendments, I pleaded with him last night. I said, in Solomon's Court, there's 12 to 1400 houses all affected. If this scheme kicked off tomorrow properly, and 300 of them houses out of the 1,200 were to go forward, where do the people go to live? There's absolutely nowhere for them. Nowhere. They've been abandoned. And I can understand there's an apprehension about moving forward, because it is a humanitarian crisis and it's not been recognised as a humanitarian crisis. You'll see all the politicians of the day in the government coming out and saying, we've invested this much money, we've invested that much money, because the narrative is that they're putting the money up into Donegal. It's not anybody in Donegal's fault what's happened here. It's a government failure. And the government need to look at this as a humanitarian crisis and address it as a humanitarian crisis, because we've been talking about this for years. The numbers indicate there's thousands upon thousands of families. Where are they going to live and where are they going to go?
One of the points you and colleagues in 100% Redress Party have made is that this is now the third redress bill that's gone through the Dáil, and it's, you believe, inevitable that there will have to be at least one more in the not too distant future. And your argument is, why not just sit down, figure out exactly what needs to be done and implement it now? Because if we don't, we're just going to have to keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back.
This is exactly it. The fact of the matter is, we've seen two failures, okay, and we're going into a third now. Waiving pre-legislation scrutiny and rushing forward this amendment so that people could get the 10% retrospective, I can understand that end of it. But then throwing other things into it, It's a dirty tactic as far as I was concerned. And what it done was it pushed forward legislation, pre-legislation scrutiny, couldn't scrutinise it, couldn't look at it and then push it forward. Mistakes of the past coming in again. But this time it's a wee bit different because this time I'm there and I'm holding them accountable. And it's nearly like a thorn in their side. And they know that we're not going anywhere. We're pushing this. And what they've got going on now, and there is a worry, down in Wexford, there's a pyrotite issue currently going on. And there's a pyrotite issue in Donegal. Geographically, at other ends of the island of Ireland, and there's two issues going on of the exact same defective concrete. And they are about 5 to 10 years behind us, but they will catch up and it will sweep. And what I'm telling them now is please address this now, or you'll be playing back videos of what I've said in years, and he was right. And doesn't give me satisfaction because I'm fighting for the people and I see what's coming down the line and they don't seem to see it or they don't seem to care. And that's the thing that really gets to everybody on the ground. The fact of the matter is Donegal, geographically isolated, a humanitarian crisis, and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are quite happy to say, we're investing money here, but they're not. We're at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the defective concrete crisis.
And the pre-legislative scrutiny thing is important because we didn't get pre-legislative scrutiny before the last bill that came in over the course of the last government. And the argument was all the mistakes in that bill that have perpetuated into the current situation came because there wasn't that pre-legislative scrutiny where the government could have been given a steer and there could have been very strong pointers given as to where there were mistakes and where there were potential pitfalls. You're saying, you know, not only have they not learned from that experience, but they've now rushed through these amendments, which ultimately, without pre-legislative scrutiny, means that not only are those mistakes being perpetuated, but new mistakes are being made.
New mistakes will be made. The fact of the matter is, this is really solvable. The 82 amendments were originally voted down. The majority of them could go into a new defective concrete scheme and make it work. And the people on the ground are the people that you should be engaging with, but they're not. There's nobody from Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil engaging with anybody on the ground because they're dealing with the civil servants who are actually controlling this and they're going, yes, that's a good idea. The lack of will is the biggest problem we have and the government need to waken up to this because we are heading for a humanitarian disaster if it's not already started. Because as I said to you, if you take, for example, places in Carindonagh, places in Buncrana, places in Letterkenny, hundreds and hundreds of houses are deteriorating. They're not going to be here in 10 years' time. Where are their families going to go? Where are the people going to go? We're not building enough houses in Donegal. I keep on saying this. People will stay and they'll stand in front of a 12 or 13 houses getting built. Well done, well done. I can understand that. But we need hundreds, if not thousands, of houses in Donegal because we have a population that's grown and we have nowhere to go and there's a humanitarian crisis on the way with the defective concrete scheme.
Yeah. Deputy Charles Ward, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's obviously one we, the programme and the news, will be keeping an ongoing eye on and we'll be doing so for, it seems, many years to come. Thank you very much indeed. Going to take a short break back after these. Charles, thank you. The Donegal Disabled Person Association has been launched. The idea is that they will be consulted and there'll be nothing about us in Donegal without us. The association takes their representative role very seriously, holding ourselves accountable to our members, we're told. Now, the initial AGM of the Donegal Disabled Persons Organisation, DPO, will take place at Carra House in Letterkenny at 1:30 on Tuesday next, December 2nd. It's the day before the International Day of Disabled Persons. And I'm delighted to be joined on Zoom this morning by John Doherty, who's a spokesperson. John, a very good morning to you.
Hold the audio.
Good to speak to you, John. John, it's an important event, this AGM, because effectively what you're saying is, if you're going to be making decisions about what affects me, please consult with me and my representatives before you do it.
Yeah, that's really what we're about. You know, that's really a lot of the time we're disabled by our barriers. We're not disabled by impairment. So that's what we live as, the social model. And that we want to be consulted at what happens to us and with us at all times.
In terms of the AGM that's taking place, John, obviously, in you got to want involvement from the people most affected, which are disabled people, and there are a variety of disabilities, there are a variety of needs, and you'll be hopeful, I'm sure, to get a very wide variety of people involved in the DPO going into the future.
Yeah, we hope that we get a large variety of people with various impairments. But we also would like disabled people from all across the county. So that would include, you know, a lot of people who may not see themselves as disabled, but in fact they are. You know, I'll say people of mental health issues and so on and so forth.
From the point of view of where you stand at the moment, I take it there's an ad hoc committee in place. Are you looking at actually electing a formal committee now next week?
That's hopefully, yeah. Our plan is to elect the usual committee, the chairperson, the secretary, the treasurer, and so on and so forth. Yeah, that's really what we're hoping to do.
Now, if anyone wants to join, they can email DPO for Donegal. That's DPO, the letters, for the number, Donegal@gmail.com. Or they can call Pippa, who's doing some coordinating. And Pippa is on 087-477-0965. I will put those numbers on our social media as well. But as you said, John, the meeting taking place in Letterkenny, that's the major population centre. But this is not a Letterkenny association. This is a Donegal association.
Yeah, so we're looking for people from all over Donegal. You know, Donegal being the county it is, it can be difficult to travel, but we'd like people to attend if they're in a position to do so.
In terms of your contacts with people like the TDs, Donegal County Council, I take it that process has started already?
Yeah. So we have been contacting various organisations, the County Council, the ATU, you know, and various other organisations that would be working with disabled people on a regular basis.
Now, we know that Donegal County Council, for instance, does have strategic committees that discuss policy, discuss needs. I mean, I'm sure you would like to see the DPO invited to take a place on some of those committees that would directly involve you, that you would actually have a seat at the table when policy is being discussed.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's really what it is, because a lot of the time, like as the statement says, like, nothing about us and Donegal without us. So a lot of the time that happens, not only Donegal, but across the country, where disabled people are left out of a lot of conversations, and then their needs aren't met as a result. So if people are to ask us what we want and what we need, we'd be able to tell them, you know, basically where the barriers are, and then give them solutions as how they can rectify them.
Yeah, so just to repeat, John, the meeting is taking place, AGM of the DPO, Donegal Disabled Persons Organisation. It's in Carra House in Letterkenny at 1:30 on Tuesday next, December 2nd.
Yep. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
John, hope you get a great turnout from right across the county. And I'll just repeat the contact details. Anyone wants to join Donegal DPO, you can email DPO for Donegal. That's DPO, the letters, for the number, @gmail.com. Or you can call Pippa on 087-477-0965. John, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. And all the best. And we hope you get a good turnout, as we say, from right across the county of Donegal. That's the DPO AGM taking place on Tuesday next, December 2nd. Now, just one or two comments and questions. The caller says, is anyone who started building in October 2024 entitled to the extra 10% we are still building? My understanding is yes. The cut-off point for that was March of last year. And as Deputy Ward said, in the region of 43 families have been excluded because they started before March of last year. But if you started after March of last year, yes, you can indeed retrospectively claim that 10%. Cora says, I'm curious to know if you're aware of the broadband internet outage in Gortahorik, although not affecting the village itself. Many people in the Keeldrum, Fannaboy and surrounding areas have had no internet since last week. This was caused by a driver crashing into a telegraph pole sometime around about Tuesday, the 11th of November. Now, AIR, formerly AIRCOM, were informed, but there's been little or no communication since. Which is strange because they effectively own and operate the telegraph broadband lines. Other internet providers have been in touch with their customers, we're told, such as Vodafone, but AIR have stayed silent. Many complaints and queries have been directed to them, yet they have remained tight-lipped on the matter. And caller asks, I mean, why is this corner of Donegal swiftly becoming a third world country? Why does no one seem to notice or care? Are we not important enough to take seriously? Why does it take over a week to erect a telegraph pole? So asks our caller. I want to mention, by the way, Lifeline, the Inishowen Domestic Violence Service, is holding a coffee morning. It's taking place tomorrow at Wesley Hall in Carndonna between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Everyone is welcome. Coffee, tea and light refreshments, with all proceeds going directly to their counselling and support services. And this is all part of the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Now, International Day Against Gender-Based Violence was earlier this week, and there are now 16 days during which this issue is being highlighted.